Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. A long cycle of U.S. equity outperformance over international equities has left investors wondering, why add international stocks to a portfolio? However, as the global economy has turned a corner, so have prospects for international equities, and many international markets have performed well in 2024 so far. In fact, more than half of the 50 top-performing companies this year are located outside of the United States. In addition to favorable valuations, an improving economic backdrop and positive fundamentals present plenty of opportunities around the world. To share her views on the benefits of allocating internationally, I'm excited to be joined by my colleague Gabriela Santos, Chief Market Strategist for the Americas here at JP Morgan Asset Management. Before we begin, if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can now watch along on YouTube by tuning into our JP Morgan Asset Management channel, linked to the show notes. Now let's get started. Gabby, welcome to Insights Now.
Thank you so much. Great to be here, David.
So last year we saw the United States lead other countries in terms of growth, but we saw central banks in other developed countries raise rates just as they did in the United States. So where are we right now in both of those cycles?
So I think we're seeing this year a bit more in the growth convergence side and a little bit more divergence when it comes to inflation and central banks. In terms of growth, yes, for a couple of years now, the U.S. has truly been exceptional, has been surprising quite positively and has seen above potential growth, where we had some sogginess in places like the Eurozone, UK, China. This year, we're actually seeing positive economic surprises from these places. It's not that they're booming, it's just that there was a lot of pessimism about these economies. The great thing, for example, for Europe, inflation's coming down, the jobs market is still doing quite well, so real wages are rising. And consumers still have quite a lot of pent-up savings, unlike here in the U.S. For the euro area, for example, consumption's still about 6% below pre-pandemic trend. These are also economies that are a bit more manufacturing-oriented, so it's good to see more stabilization there. When it comes to the divergent side, with inflation, for example, in the euro area, the UK, we've seen more progress this year to normalizing inflation, plus the still muted economic growth standpoint is leading some of these central banks to move ahead of the Fed. So you've had, for example, four developed market central banks already cutting interest rates. The Bank of England might join them later in the summer. So there's a little bit more divergence when it comes to actual central bank policy this year.
And so, of course, that brings me to the dollar, because, of course, the dollar is very sensitive to differences in interest rates. So how do you feel this slightly more hawkish Fed view is going to impact the dollar? And then does that matter for international investors?
So I do think it's been a big factor this year. The dollar is stronger by over 3% already this year. And we find that in the short term, it is very related to interest rate differentials. Not the level of the differential, but is it getting wider or is it getting narrower? And what we saw this year is because we did have some rate cuts priced out of the Fed and some rate cuts priced in for some other central banks, we saw that interest rate differential widen in favor of the U.S. This happened especially in April. If we remember back then, that was when investors became a little bit more hawkish about the Fed. And as a result, that was really the month where the dollar strengthened quite substantially. The one item we haven't mentioned here but is important is Japan, very much an economy that's just getting started in tightening policy, but doing so very, very, very slowly. And as a result, one of the weakest currencies this year has been the yen. The differential between U.S. treasuries and Japanese government bonds have widened a little bit more by about 20 basis points this year. Going forward, we know all this. We know there's going to be divergence in central banks. The Fed is still eventually going to cut. It's a matter of when, not if. And as a result, I think the dollar is kind of topping out here. So it's a strong dollar for longer, not a stronger dollar for longer. And for international investors, I think that means there's been a big drag from the dollar component, the currency component, this year, last year. And I think from here on out, it's more of a neutral factor.
So the headwind is gone, but not necessarily a tailwind yet.
Not quite yet. Eventually, yes, the dollar is very much an expensive currency. And perhaps later in the year, once the Fed starts cutting, a bit more attention on this growth convergence, maybe that gets a little bit of a lower momentum for the dollar, but not quite yet.
Well, speaking of eventually, for a very long time, we've said that developed countries' stocks outside the United States look cheap relative to the U.S. But over time, they've been getting a little bit cheaper, a little bit cheaper. So, you know, if they've been getting cheaper for so long, what has changed here? Or do you think that it's now time to get into Europe and Japan?
So the valuation argument's been there for a while. These currencies have been weak for a while, and the equity markets have been at a discount to the U.S., and they still are, for the record. Mm-hmm. And the starting point does matter. For example, international equities trade at about a 33% discount to U.S. equities. Always normal to be cheaper, especially Europe, Japan, but it's just double the discount. So like fire sale at the moment. Mm-hmm. The trick over the past few years is there was no catalyst to change that. And I think we're at a point, it took a pandemic, but we're here now, where there's actually a change in Europe, in Japan especially, and that means this huge discount, it's just not merited anymore. So to close some of that discount, and what changed? Well, think about Europe, think about Japan. These are the kind of markets that you have a lot of more value-oriented companies, banks, industrials, commodities. So the change in the macro backdrop's important. Not that anything is booming in either place, but it's less bad. You have positive inflation, you have positive interest rates again. That's a better backdrop for earnings for these kind of companies. And then also, in terms of micro reforms, the behavior of companies, Europe now has the same buyback yield as the U.S. There's actual focus on shareholders. And Japan, huge governance reforms to try to inject a little bit more dynamism in Japanese companies. So there's a substantial re-rating there happening. So closing that discount, the Japan discount that was there for 30 years. And then lastly, of course, these are markets that are much more internationally exposed themselves. So for Japan, 60% of revenues come from outside Japan. Europe, 50%. So it's not just about what's happening domestically there. There are ways to play big long-term investment themes, luxury goods, automation, AI, renewable energy, biotechnology. These companies just happen to be listed in Europe or Japan.
And I guess speaking of long-term investment themes, one long-term investment theme for some time has been China. But of course, the Chinese equity market has struggled in recent years. And it's having a good year so far, but there are issues. So do you think this is a time to get into China? And also, you know, are there other opportunities in emerging markets right now?
It's changed so much just in the last 3 years. Remember, back in early 2021, China introduced a new five-year plan, and there was a substantial shift in priorities. Before, it was growth, growth, growth. Now it's growth, but also deleveraging, economic equality, the energy transition, geopolitics. And it's just a more uncertain, volatile environment for Chinese growth, for Chinese companies. And I think investors are thinking about China now, first as sometimes a little bit more tactical. Mm-hmm. When it gets super cheap, then it rebounds quite strongly, like we've seen this year. It's up 30% since January. But then eventually it kind of hits a top. So it's a bit more tactical than it used to be and much more selective, much more about the alpha, the good stories that are there, not just being in China for the beta. Meanwhile, I think what's fascinating is that EM has been actually performing differently than China. So last year, China was down, third year in a row, negative double-digit performance. EM ex China was up 22%. Because there are other long-term themes there. Think of the AI theme. It's not just the Mag 7. Where are those semiconductors produced? Taiwan. Which other semiconductors do we need? Memory. Who makes them? Korea. So huge theme there of AI and tech. Or how about India? Totally separate story from China, beats to its own drum. It's got demographics, reforms, plus high-quality companies. And then lastly, the good news is you also have tailwinds for Latin America, for example, Mexico. This whole idea of friendshoring or nearshoring, setting up production in Mexico away from China. So I think that it's exciting. There's a lot more to emerging markets now than just being tied to what's happening in China or what's happening with the Fed. And so it's a broader allocation to Asia, including Japan, I would put in there as well.
So bottom line, there are plenty of opportunities in international investments.
Definitely. And there's been very strong performance. I wouldn't overlook that Japan and Europe are up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, thank you so much for sharing your insights today, Gabby.
Thank you so much for having me, David.
On our next episode, I'll be joined by Jack Manley, a global market strategist on my team, for a conversation on investing habits across generations. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning in today and speak with you soon.
This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.